Thank you. And go Bears.
Thanks to Ray Diaz, Adam Studzinski, Brandon Fryer, Connor O'Donnell, Kevin Lapka. Is Kevin Lapka still here or did he leave? Is he gone now? Is he still here?
His last day is next Tuesday.
Okay, so I can still
find him. He's leaving?
Yeah.
Hey. Always the last to know.
Well, you know, good for him. I'm proud of him. He gets to spread his wings a little bit. We thank our guests. First of all, thanks to Marshall Harris again for sitting in.
Happy
so
to
much.
Be here.
It was really fun. And thanks for indulging me on the Guar thing.
Listen,
you didn't have to do that.
I learned something new. I'm all about broadening my horizons. I told you that. Like, yo, we all have to do it sometimes. I don't like people who don't know how to broaden their horizons.
It's why I sent you the video from the NPR Tiny Desk, just so you
and I watched.
So you could experience Sex Cow.
I need to know what the Sex Cow was all about.
And the other song. So, yeah, now you know. Jason Leisure, Paul Charchian, Matt Bowen, Jarrett Payton, and Blothar the Berserker were our guests today. And apparently they tell me we need one more winner for the pair of tickets.
Yeah, the thing happened again. Like, this is a great opportunity to see Arturis Karnišovas and Billy Donovan if you're a Bulls fan. But it's during the morning show. Morning show. Let's emphasize the morning show. So if you can't attend the morning show, don't call the number.
So should I just call her 6? Right now?
Right now.
Caller 6 at 312-540-0670. It is time for Spiegel and Company. It is Matt Spiegel.
Spiegel and Company.
And Paul Pabst.
Pauly,
how cool is this?
Pauly MF and Pabst is my company today.
I think I'm the 6th caller. I would love those tickets. I don't know if I'm...
Listen.
Can get those.
Who wouldn't?
Pauly Pabst has been the executive producer of the Dan Patrick Show for how long, Pauly?
Oh, man. I'll put it this way. So long that the first year we did the show, our first ever guest host on the Dan Patrick Show was Dan Bernstein in 2007.
I remember that. Bernsy, you remember being the first ever guest host of the Dan Patrick Show?
Indeed, I do. I know exactly where I was sitting in the old studios at NBC Tower, and it was an absolute blast to do it then. I was mentioning before, Paul, that you have somehow carved out a unique identity on Twitter as a trusted guide to the TV sports experience. Mm. Where
yeah, if
the term late snug, I'm like, oh, I'm tuning in.
You know, if this is first paragraph on my obituary, maybe that's what it's going to be. But when I started Twitter in 2011, I was a little behind the game. I saw it and I was, of course, get off my lawn. But then when I picked it up, I said, I'm really going to use it like my moron friends and I do in high school. We have one of those text chains. Hey, turn on the Bulls Orlando Magic game. It's getting late, snug. And we used to say that to each other. And that's why I started posting on social media. And I watch a lot of college football, a lot of NFL, a lot of college basketball. And I just give alerts to people. Turn on CBS, Bears, Colts, snug. And I think it's a bit of a service.
It is a bit of a service. It's a wonderful thing. And I got to say, in terms of our viewing nationally, obviously Red Zone has mastered it in terms of the witching hour and that final hour of the first big batch of games. But MLB Big Inning has really stepped up our ability as a baseball populace to see everything late and snug. That's what we want. That's what we need, Paul.
You know, and Matt, you know, here's how savvy I am. I've been doing this for years for absolutely free. I passed on any opportunity to maximize it, to monetize it, and I just do it for the people, which sounds like I'm doing it for the people. It's just I have no business acumen. That's what it is, Dan Bernstein.
Yeah, that sounds accurate.
I'm right there with you. The number of ideas that I've had that have been co-opted by other people, I mean, it's still people send me, like, whatever version of the passenger seat buffet is out there.
Right.
What is the passenger seat buffet?
The passenger seat buffet, Marshall, is something that I ideated and never quite got the prototype finished. It's got a beanbag bottom, like one of those laptop desks.
Okay.
It's got like the slightly rubberized top, so everything will stay in place. It sits on the passenger seat, and it's got a place for a plate. It's got a drink holder. It has spots for dipping sauces. It has a small...
This sounds like a lot, first of all.
It's a lot. I'm not done. It has a small, like, little garbage receptacle. It's got a place for cutlery. And then, when you're done, you fold it up into the passenger seat and zip it into the passenger seat so that beanbag bottom becomes the back.
And take my money. Take my money.
Isn't it? it's a winner. Can't you see the think pieces on CNN about the fattening of America?
No, but listen,
blaming me.
Okay, but if it's Shark Tank, now Kevin O'Leary is saying, yeah, that's great, but can I scale it? And how many units have you sold?
That's why I haven't made the prototype yet.
Yeah, I would be in on that prototype. We do live in a country where that sounds appropriate for America.
Yeah.
And as I have show friends, so I have
right.
I don't drive.
But especially our listeners,
people
right?
Drive
right, Paulie?
Me places.
Okay. See, but for our listeners, Paulie, our truck driver friends, our yes. delivery peoples, come on.
I love this. I just went online and bought the domain eatingwhilstdriving.com. It's all yours, Matt. All yours. All yours.
But there's other versions of it out there. So, you know, you didn't market Late Snug, and I didn't market the passenger seat buffet.
And, Paul, you've got a Chicago history of your own. It's not like you're an interloper here.
Yeah. I don't want to be a carpetbagger. Yeah, I grew up born on 104th Street in Roseland, lived there until I was about five, then went to Chicago Heights, Glenwood, went to Marion Catholic High School. Went to Southern Illinois University. I spent 5.5 years at Southern Illinois, and I only got an undergraduate degree. That means I'm
well done.
You enjoyed yourself, did you?
Yeah, I had a good time. Easy to get in, tough to get out. That's Southern Illinois. And then, you know, worked in Chicago for a while, and then went to the East Coast for a while.
See, that there's a long history of Salukis at this radio station. Harvey Wells, who used to run the place.
Sure.
Mike Murphy was a Saluki. A Southern Illinois guy. George Hoffman is a Saluki.
Hub Arkish.
Uh-huh.
Sure. I used to work for Hub back in the day. But my favorite, you know, I still only really listen to Chicago sports radio. When I get done on the Dan Patrick Show, I turn you guys on. I listen in the morning on the way. I listen all afternoon to you, Dan. Then Matt, I listen to you guys because I need my Chicago sports fix. I get national by working on the Dan Patrick Show. You know, I grew up, my first favorite team was DePaul University basketball and Mark Aguirre. And I love where they're going, but I just, you know, I live for it. I can't get enough of it.
That's the team that broke our hearts.
Oof. Getting better though.
Listening to all of that, I have to ask. I know you're going to get into all the things over the next 4 hours or so, but like where are you at right now with Chicago sports on the whole?
The state of the union?
Yeah, of Chicago sports.
Small question. Yeah. Everything.
No, where but like, wow. But like that's because I'm asking you, like, how do you feel overall about all these things that are going on at once? I mean,
okay, I'll try to do one sentence. The Sox are embarrassing. The Cubs are frustrating. The Bears are hopeful. The DePaul in a long time is hopeful. The Chicago Sky are interesting and out of nowhere compelling. The Bulls are mediocre and don't show any promise anytime soon. The Blackhawks aren't good, but they have star power and hope. There it is. That's where I'm at.
You want rapid fire hot Chicago sports takes? I think the show is over.
I'm done. I'll see you later.
I know where he stands now, and that's what I wanted to know.
Well, it's the truth of the matter, and it's why we've all put so much emotional hope into the Bears. You know, yeah. and it's why 1-1 feels the way it does when it probably shouldn't. Frankly,
anxiety,
and we'll go there in a minute. But you know. This White Sox article from Kenny Rosenthal.
Just the start of it.
What have we been saying?
Oh, dude, for years we have been trying to tell people, and I always think of a couple of things. I always think of the realization that I had when they played against the Tampa Rays at one point and just got thoroughly embarrassed. And this was at the tail end of what should have been the winning window when it was obvious. And it was like, what you are on the field is a product at the end of a rebuild. What you are at the end of a rebuild is a product of how you draft and scout and teach and develop. And they've been terrible at that forever.
It's so funny. This article's so funny.
I don't
funny.
Think it's funny.
It's almost not sad.
It speaks to truths
it's
that we have
hilarious.
Known and tried to
I'm
tell
not
people.
Laughing.
And there
I
are
am.
Specific examples in there. But the other thing I'll think of forever is what Paul Konerko said after Tony La Russa was hired. It's the golden rule. He who has the gold makes the rules. It's Jerry Reinsdorf's vanity project. It has been for a while, and it still is.
And I think what's the most frustrating, if you're a Sox fan, if you're a Bears fan and they have a terrible season, they get the number one draft pick, and that person helps you immediately. When the Chicago White Sox, they'll get the number one draft pick, but that person will help in 2 years, maybe. What's even more, there's not direct hope.
And they won't get the number one draft pick. They'll only get the number 10 draft pick because of the anti-tanking rules that have been put in.
Who cares here's where the draft pick is. Look where they took Madrigal. Look where they drafted a first baseman in Andrew Vaughn. I mean, and then, you know, under the Kenny Williams regime, they'd find some toolsy athlete who had no idea how to play baseball. Mm-hmm. So I don't. We're so far beyond the difference between the number one pick and the number 10 pick this team. But that story about having two separate sets of spin rate data or spin data.
And the inner strife that came with it.
That's the funniest thing I've ever... That's a Marx Brothers movie.
Yeah, by the way...
I thought it was an Onion article. When I first saw that part of it, I thought it was in the Onion.
And then the plain thing to start it off was just like... It's just such a great example of like what big-time sports is supposed to look and feel like versus what is actually happening on the South Side.
Yeah, no, it is what it is. And we have known for a good long while... And it just gets exposed there. You know, it's interesting. I always think about that draft, that Andrew Vaughn draft, when they took the first baseman from the Pac-12 or whatever it is, or whatever it was at the time, number three. Numbers one and two is going to go down in history as the best one and two in the history of the Major League Baseball draft. It is Adley Rutschman, number one, and Bobby Witt Jr., number two.
That's pretty good.
So that's one and two. And then there's Vaughn, and then there's somebody else, and then there's Riley Green, an really good toolsy outfielder for the Tigers who are making a push, and C.J. Abrams, who is in the midst of a breakout year for the Washington Nationals. And in between, the White Sox took Andrew Vaughn.
And don't just glide over the fact, when you say Tigers making a push, I think they're a half game out
of
the wild card with from what we all knew...
Was the manager.
The manager they had hired.
The manager that Rick Hahn wanted to hire.
I think what left me with that article is the fact that the development part of it, you guys are talking about players and how they've come and gone, but like, how much better could they have been if they had been, quote, properly developed? Because we don't know how much of a factor that's been with some of these guys that they've taken.
I thought Kenny made the point in there, Paulie, that the White Sox got emboldened by the 2005 World Series. It showed them that their short-term mindset of just going out and doing whatever they can to scuffle along and compete every year could work, and they stayed committed to that even while the rest of the league caught up to holistic organizations that actually knew what the hell they were doing. So
let me run this by you guys, and you guys tell me what you think. Please. I think there should be a rule in professional sports. If your team does not make the playoffs for 10 straight seasons, and I'm not singling out the White Sox, but whatever franchise, the owner must sell. If you don't make the postseason for 10 straight years, there's a rule, you must sell your franchise.
I mean, I love the idea of it, but we know the reality of what rich people do, and that is whatever they want.
Whatever they want, baby. I mean, there's so many good vanity projects out there. Hey, let me make an album. I'm in my 50s, but I'm going to make a great album.
I don't know anybody who's done anything like that.
Me neither. But let me hire all the people, and I'll write all the songs. Sometimes those projects are really good, actually. But, you know, this is what Reinsdorf's doing. It's his vanity project in his 80s. He's trying to recreate the Brooklyn Dodgers that broke his heart when they moved away. So everybody is Eddie Stanky.
Start broadcasting the games in black and white.
Don't give him an idea.
Dan brought us in Reggie bars today. Like, they were delicious. They were everything that I imagined them to be.
I remember going to the drugstore in the shopping center of my youth and buying them, but you're telling me that's new?
They're great.
Yeah, they brought them back. But
I'll send you the story. My sister, her magazine Fast Company, did this wonderful story about the rebirth of the Reggie bar. There is a couple in Alberta who, and this woman was attending to her octogenarian mother, who said, you know what would make me very, very, she's in a nursing home. She said, what would make me very happy is this candy bar from my youth. It's a Canadian candy bar called a Cuban Lunch. You know, it's peanuts and caramel, whatever. So she realized that the copyright had expired. So she bought it for like $200, went to a chocolatier, and just to make her mother happy, remade her mother's favorite candy bar.
The Cuban Lunch.
So it gave them an idea of what other candy bars, like zombie copyrights, are just sitting out there.
I remember the zombie bar. The white chocolate-covered candy bar. I thought that's what you meant.
But they found the Reggie bar. And they needed Reggie Jackson's personal permission to do it. Ooh. So they bothered him and bothered. He said, fine, send me a proposal. And he's like, all right, this looks great. But he said, I need to be involved in the taste testing to make sure that it is worthy of my name.
His name is on the bar.
His name, that's his picture awesome. Is on the bar. So they got him involved and he was totally into it. And it's back. And it's it literally is better than ever.
All that to say, someone in the chat when we were eating these Reggie bars said, oh, Reinsdorf should have a bar. It can be called the Eckstein bar.
Oh, God.
Bring back the,
oh, the stinky. The stinky deep stanky.
So that's where
that's something different.
That's where we are. That's where we are with the White Sox.
Yeah. The Reggie bar is what? Peanuts, caramel, chocolate?
That's it.
Anything else?
That's no.
It. And it's great.
It's a very, they had the caramel in the interior is notably gooey.
It's super
and
gooey.
That's my memory as a kid of taking that first bite and pulling it away, and there are strings.
Strings. And that's
kind
what
of
it was
circular.
Like.
It's kind of in a square wrapper and kind of circular, the actual right. candy bar.
That's yep. exactly what
yep.
it is.
Yep. Mm. Yep. Yeah. And Reggie himself added more peanuts to this one.
He did. He
did.
In.
He said it.
He came over.
Give him the Catfish Hunter line.
Well, the Catfish, at the time, remember in 78, they said, well, have you tried one of these Reggie bars? And Catfish said, yeah, you open the wrapper and it tells you how good it is.
Classic.
You know,
that's good stuff.
Reggie Jackson, quality control for the Reggie bar. We've had him on our show many times, and you don't know what you're going to get when you call up to Reggie Jackson. It could be the nicest guy, or it could be the opposite.
That's interesting, because I remember Reggie as a kid, obviously, you know, he called himself the straw that stirs the drink, and he was, frankly, but super entertaining at times, and then super angry and thoughtful at the game in Alabama. Which
oh
was
yeah, he was great.
Rickford
Fields, yeah,
incredible.
When he was on the set. Yeah.
Yes, talking about his reality as a member of Charlie Finley's A's.
I think that game teams. Really reintroduced him to America to a lot of the younger audience.
I think it did.
It was giving Missy Elliott halftime guest. Hey, this Missy girl, she's going to be pretty good one day.
Paulie, what was the context of the Bears on the Dan Patrick Show this week? Did it come up nationally, the Bears and that Sunday night game?
It did a little bit. I think mostly we played around a little bit with the C.J. Stroud, Caleb Williams audio. Mm. Is there anything wrong with it? Is anything right with it? Are people making too much of it? Because sometimes we cover the coverage. We look at how stories are being covered and saying, is that fair to Caleb Williams? Was he walking away because he wants to get treatment, or was he didn't want to hear it? You know, we try not to pick a lane and just hammer some guy. So we were looking at it from both sides. CJ Stroud, he's not Joe Montana. Can he pull aside a rookie and say, here's how it works in the big league, son? You know, you look at both sides of the story.
It's interesting. Well, we're going to start with some of the noise that has surrounded this week, because it's been loud and it's been bumpy. And we've got some audio in regards to a couple stories like that. CJ Stroud and Jalen Johnson getting into it.
I love that.
Mic'd up segment. Yeah, we're going to hit that later on for anybody who didn't catch it. Shane Waldron gave us a corporate flavorless version of a Tony Wise classic. We're going to do that before we get to the top of the hour. We'll talk about the state of young quarterback play and hear from a coach the Bears recently faced in that regard. Mark Grody later on, Dave Wanstead later on, and you know, us hanging out with Paul Pabst and listeners getting to know him and his Chicago cred, as well as the national cred, all mixing together. Thank you, boys.
Have fun, guys.
All right, guys. That's Marshall Harris. That's Dan Bernstein. The Spiegel and Company Show with Shane and Tanny and Paulie Pabst kicking off next on 670 The Score.